WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.
News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. The family of a D.C. teacher is suing the city of Los Angeles for $50 million after the 31-year-old died during an encounter with the LAPD this month. The LAPD says someone flagged down officers after a hit-and-run crash. When they got there, they say they found 31-year-old Keenan Anderson running down the street and acting erratically. Body cam footage shows an officer pressing his forearm against Anderson's chest. You can hear the teacher scream, "They're trying to George Floyd me." The mother of Anderson's five-year-old son.
To watch him be hurt by the very people who are supposed to protect him is something I will never get over. My son is going to see that one day, and I don't know how I will answer any of his questions.
The police union says the family is trying to profit off of a tragedy. A vigil held last night for a 20-year-old who Prince George's County Police say was stabbed during a drug deal outside a 7-Eleven in Woodbridge. Police in Prince George's County found Jose Guerrero's body this week, about a month after he disappeared. His friend Norma Ramirez speaking at the vigil.
He was the best friend I ever had. Most sweetest person. He always counted on me. I counted on him. He was always there for me.
People in the area where it happened on a 7-Eleven on Richmond Highway are calling for change after three people were killed in that area since last July. Olive Ramirez and another 17-year-old boy were arrested in connection with the death. If you're done taking down your Christmas decorations, Arlington National Cemetery is hoping you'll give them a hand taking down theirs. Executive Director Karen Durham Aguilera on WMAL's O'Connor & Company says this morning you can join them for Wreaths Out. It's when they take away the Christmas wreaths put on the tombs by Wreaths for America.
There's more than 250,000 to pick
up. Wow.
Yes. And then also Soldiers and Airmen's Home National Cemetery in Upper Northwest D.C. We've got about 14,000 wreaths there. We need help there as well.
The parking garage is opening now. Cleanup starts at 8. Looking for a new career? You may want to head to the Loudoun Job Fair today at the Claude Moore Recreation Center in Sterling.
We do have a wide range of positions from entry level to mid-career level. We also have some seasonal positions that will be coming up available too.
Shelley Rodriguez with the Loudoun Workforce Resource Center says employers pushed for the job fair.
Employers were hungry for an in-person job fair this winter. They're very eager to meet with new candidates.
Rodriguez says bring extra copies of your resume and dress professionally. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports in the NFL playoffs. First, it's the Jaguars and the Chiefs, then the Giants and the Eagles. Also today, the Caps play the Golden Knights, the Wizards play the Magic. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Beltsville, there is still emergency utility work affecting eastbound Powder Mill Road at Garrett Avenue. Eastbound side is still closed, and traffic is being alternated on the westbound side. Traveling on the Beltway, look out for work done on the inner loop between Allentown Road and Branch Avenue in the right lane, not causing delays. And also work done reported in the outer loop approaching River Road, so watch out for that as well. Eastbound 66 between Nutley Street and the Beltway, there is a work zone in the right lane that is not causing delays at this time. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures this morning, chilly in the 30s and 40s. We'll climb up to around 45 this afternoon, and winds still about 15 miles per hour. A few passing clouds tonight, temperatures around 34. Clouds to start and rain for your Sunday afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
40 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You spent your Friday covering an annual event this year under different circumstances than the many decades before. Tell us about the March for Life.
The March for Life began in 1973 following the Supreme Court's landmark decision in Roe v. Wade, which in essence, made abortion legal throughout the United States. Many state laws that had banned abortion outright were totally overturned by the ruling of the High Court. Hence the March for Life calling for the appeal of Roe v. Wade. Well, 49 years later, just last year, the marchers got their wish when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and essentially turned the controversial issue back to the states. So why were people marching yesterday? Well, they say that now the fight is in the states, and they want to urge more Americans to change the law to ban abortion outright, state by state. The problem with that is, for now at least, it's not happening. In fact, nothing really is happening on that front since the court said Roe v. Wade was no more. Two states have made changes in their abortion laws. One is Oklahoma, which now bans abortion outright, and the other is the state of Michigan, which once Roe was struck down, its own law banning abortion in virtually every circumstance and banning state funding for the practice went on the books. Voters, however, overturned that statute and put in a new measure, Amendment 3, which would allow for abortion under virtually any circumstance and permit the state to use tax dollars for it. That was passed with about 57% of the vote last fall. The marchers have hopes that this will change, that people's attitudes will change. This is usually billed as a Catholic event, and it was primarily Catholic, with more than 400 marchers coming from the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of New Orleans and a very big contingent from Notre Dame. However, I talked to others who were there, including one Sri Lankan-born lady who now lives in Charlotte and says that she is a Christian in general. She's there to pray for the end of abortion in the United States, as were four Orthodox Christians from Pennsylvania. One more thing. The March for Life gets younger and younger, and it's increasingly a haven for high school and college students. What does that tell this reporter? They'll be marching for many years to come.
With the midterms behind us, people are starting to talk about 2024 more and more every day. A lot of speculation about what Joe Biden will do. What are you hearing now that we have the State of the Union coming up? He's teased an announcement, and then we have, of course, his document problems. What's the latest on the buzz on Biden in 2024?
He's going to run, Rick. When I was covering the race for Speaker of the House, I talked to Democratic staffers, to members of Congress who are in the Democratic Party, and to a person, they say he's running. You hear some noises from Governor Gavin Newsom of California and a few others who are out there, but for the most part, everyone said they would only run if Biden did not. That's what it looks like at this point, that he will be the nominee for president again at the age of 81.
Nikki Haley made some comments in a conversation with Brett Baer at the Fox News Channel this week. It came close to announcing that she was going to run.
She certainly did. And I would say one thing. Nikki Haley's a former governor of South Carolina. She's a first-generation American, her father being an immigrant from India. She has an amazing story to tell. Now, that said, she's from South Carolina. Increasingly, the favorite of Republicans is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And Donald Trump still packs a punch in the Palmetto State. He's got a rally coming up next month there, and on stage with him will be his good friend, Senator Lindsey Graham, his very good friend, Governor Henry McMaster, one of the first statewide officials to endorse Trump in 2016, and Senator Tim Scott. Now, all things being equal, and they never are, Nikki Haley has not been governor for nearly 6 years and has been going around the country speaking. The former U.N. ambassador is also criticized by Republicans for being a closet interventionist. One of her top advisors and speechwriters is a known interventionist. And this means the word neocon will surface when she runs. Can she be strong? Yes. More likely, I would bet on the wisdom of others, which is that she's the front runner to be the vice presidential candidate.
All right, so we're at the end of week two of the Republican Congress. We're hearing a lot about investigations. What about other accomplishments?
Well, for one thing, it appears as though the Republicans are going to craft a budget of their own that would go much farther than, as one put it, Don Quixote. Of course, he was the figure in classical literature who thought of himself as a brave knight and wanted to challenge windmills. He didn't do too well with it. In all likelihood, Republicans will not get their dream of a slimmed-down budget, but they will get a vote on it. And in the process, we will hear the fears about government shutting down, and in the end, this will be worked out. Another thing, last week, along with a string of investigatory bodies, the House Republican leaders announced the creation of a China Commission. In other words, to finally investigate not only the human rights abuses of China, but China's theft of intellectual property in the United States and its use of espionage in the United States. This will be chaired by veteran Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, who's known to be a hardliner on the issue of human rights. So, Kevin McCarthy is still Speaker after 2 weeks. There is no dissension. No one has used the rules to try to bring him down. If he has any problem, it's George Santos.
Well, Santos has gotten some committee appointments.
Yes, he has. Now, Speaker McCarthy's been under fire because he is just following the Supreme Court ruling Powell v. McCormick. If one is a resident of the state from which he or she is elected, if one meets the constitutional age of 25, and if someone carries a certificate of election, they must be seated in Congress. No one has voted to deny Congressman Santos any seats. He's there, and he's representing a constituency that includes Nassau County and parts of New York City. As long as he sits in Congress and has the constitutional requirement to be there, there's nothing McCarthy or anyone else can do. Now, I'm told on Capitol Hill that investigations are in focusing on where he got the money to run. And if he's violated election laws or possibly gotten money from overseas, then the process of the Ethics Committee plus some district attorney out there would force him to resign.
And you're on the road in the week ahead to California, a big Republican powwow?
Yes, and a very expensive one, too. Republicans don't hold their meetings at the Holiday Inn. This is in Dana Point, California, a lovely city in Orange County. Ronna McDaniel, who has served 3 terms as Republican National Chairman, is running for an unprecedented 4th term. She has the endorsement of the Republican who first put her in the chairman's job, Donald Trump, and claims the support of 100 out of 168 Republican National Committee members. Not so, says attorney Harmy Dillon, who is California's Republican National Committee woman and the challenger to Ronna McDaniel. Her message is clear. Under Chairman McDaniel, in 3 election cycles, the Republicans have lost. It's time for new blood. She is a friend of Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity and others in the media. She's a frequent fixture on Fox News and other programs and believe she would be an effective spokeswoman. She also touches a resonant chord when she said, unlike Chairman McDaniel, she would fire the outside consultants whom she charges are bleeding the RNC. It will be an interesting contest and closer than people think, and I'll be reporting on all the action out in sunny California.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you, sir.
Looking forward to the sun and fun of the Golden State. See you, Rick.
7:21, the Saturday morning update. Time for a traffic check with Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the inner loop of the Beltway at the Eisenhower Avenue connector, there's a disabled vehicle on the right shoulder, partially crowding the right lane, so use extra caution there. It is not causing any delays at this time. On the inner loop between Allentown Road and Branch Avenue, there is road work in the right lane to watch out for, but that is not causing delays. And on the inner and outer loop between Bradley Boulevard and Seven Locks Road, some road work still reported there, mainly along the right side of the roadway. So far, it looks like traffic is moving at speed right now, traveling on 270, headed from Clarksburg and Gaithersburg in towards North Bethesda. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures this morning not freezing, but chilly in the 30s and 40s. We'll climb up to around 45 this afternoon, and northwest winds still about 15 miles per hour. A few passing clouds tonight. Temperatures down to near freezing, around 34 to 35 for the D.C. metro area. Clouds to start and rain for your Sunday afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
35 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:22 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkison joins us. She is the host of Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we saw stories this week about windmill construction off the Jersey Shore and the number of whales that were washing up on the shore. That's something we saw in the news, but something we don't see too often in the news is the impact of windmills and some of the other solar energy construction going on inside America. And you've got a story on that tomorrow, and I think it's really important that people see this.
Well, we've talked about how building these things can be very toxic. It involves, you know, questionable Chinese labor. It involves a lot of toxic processes. But even aside from that, there is a question about now prime agricultural land in this country being used now instead of farming food to have solar farms and wind farms. And this is happening across the country. So for my program on Full Measure tomorrow, I went to Wisconsin, one of the places where this is happening. And you can see how these food farms are, these farmers are being made offers they cannot refuse because the green energy folks are getting so much taxpayer subsidy, they can offer food farmers way more for their land to put solar arrays on it or windmills than the farmers can make by growing food. So it's being gobbled up as prime agricultural land in some places by green energy. And there are some people who really believe this could impact the food supply down the road. Others disagree. You'll hear from both sides on the program, but it certainly is a fascinating debate.
Common sense might dictate that if you reduce the number of farms and the amount of farmland and the amount of produce and cattle and things like that on that farmland, that theoretically the food prices would start to go up, but they don't seem to see an issue there.
Well, you know, it just depends on who you talk to. There definitely is concern, particularly after the bare shelves during COVID and the supply chain things that we had go wrong. There's concern that if we start giving up a lot of land with no restrictions, food farm land, that is, not just idle land, to these green energy causes, that it could impact the food supply. On the other side, what are they saying? Well, they say the United States makes so much more food or grows so much more, produces so much more than we need, that we're not even close to getting to that position. And they also claim there is so much land that is unused that there's, you know, there's no way they would use enough of it to make an impact. But there are differences of opinions on that. You know, one thing that they're thinking of doing in Virginia that I read, one county that's getting gobbled up by these things, they're thinking of saying, well, you can put these things, these solar arrays and wind farms, on not otherwise non-productive land, but not on prime agricultural land, which seems to me to be maybe one way around some of the dispute on this.
Well, you were in Wisconsin for that story. You went to Great Britain for a contrasting story on obesity.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting in Great Britain that they were proposing something that I think you could say is pretty brave, considering the industries that they were going up against to do this. But they were proposing and actually passed the strictest junk food advertising restrictions in the world. Things like you could not advertise what they call junk food on TV before a certain watershed time of night, you know, when the kiddies go to bed, because this was mostly aimed at childhood obesity. They have the same problem there as we do. But there are also restrictions like only being able to put junk food in certain places in stores, making sure that this was a big one. There was no internet advertising of junk food to anybody, and I'm not even sure how that would work, because how do you control the internet that comes from other places besides your own country? But my story is going to take a look at what I call a funny thing happened on the way to implementing the restrictions. The junk food industry really got a grip on this, and they've had one delay after another. They were supposed to be all in effect by now, but they haven't taken hold. They were delayed till I'm not sure they'll ever go into effect. But it's a really, really interesting discussion.
We hear the term woke a lot these days, and many people interpret it many different ways. You speak with a professor who has a very interesting interpretation.
Well, yeah, I've spoken to Professor Eric Kaufman. He's an author as well in the UK about these matters before. I think he's a really big thinker on these topics. And he's coined a phrase that I think makes a lot of sense. It's called cultural socialism. That's what he's calling the woke movements and the various impacts that it's having. You know, because I asked him, first of all, I asked him what percentage of the population typically is on board with some of these ideas that are pretty radical, with the transgender lobby, with critical race theory, with men competing in women's sports. And he said, time and again, surveys show it's a relatively small slice of the public, and yet it dominates the conversation as if it's pretty much everybody who thinks a certain way. And so I asked him why that is, and he's got some really interesting thoughts on it. He's writing a book about cultural socialism that he thinks has replaced the traditional liberalism that many of us were used to, which has to do with sort of bringing up the underdog and making sure there's equality. This is a whole different ballgame, and he thinks we're only at the beginning of what's going to be a very even more divisive and pervasive movement around the globe.
You can catch those stories tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7, also on News Channel 8, different times during Sunday afternoon. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:28, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland are coming up after the 7:30 news with Heather Curtis.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A lawsuit's filed against the city of Los Angeles by the family of a D.C. teacher who died this month after being tased by LAPD officers. Kenan Anderson's attorney, Carl Douglas, says the Digital Pioneers Academy teacher was tased six times in more than 42 seconds.
Is there any wonder why 4 hours later, his heart could no longer withstand the pressure from that taser and gave out?
They tried to take him into custody after witnesses say he caused a hit-and-run crash. The police union says the family is trying to profit off of a tragedy. The Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission gives Metro the green light to inspect the wheels on its 7,000 series rail cars for issues every week instead of every 4 days. And that's good news for riders. The transit agency says that will enable it to run more trains and improve service. Metro has been gradually putting more of those cars back on the tracks since sidelining all of them after a derailment in 2021. More Virginia schools are admitting to failing to notify students of National Merit Awards in time to include them in early college admissions applications.
Stafford County Public Schools says six commended students were not notified in a timely manner. The school system is apologizing for what it calls an administrative error. Attorney General Jason Meares is investigating Fairfax County Public Schools for the same issue, claiming administrators may have violated students' civil rights.
WMAL's Rachel Sutherland. And in sports, in the NFL playoffs, first it's the Jaguars and the Chiefs, then the Giants and the Eagles. The Caps play the Golden Knights. The Wizards take on the Magic. Traffic and weather next. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
A couple of work zones still reported on the Beltway on the inner and outer loop between Bradley Boulevard and Seven Locks Road. Watch out for possible lane closures there. And on the inner loop at Auth Road as you approach Branch Avenue, a work zone reported there. Earlier disabled on the inner loop at the Eisenhower Avenue connector, though, has been cleared from the roadway. In Beltsville, you will still find utility work taking place. This affects eastbound Powder Mill Road at Garrett Avenue. Eastbound side still closed till about 11 o'clock this morning. Traffic is being alternated on the westbound side. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, partly sunny, highs in the mid-40s. Right now, 40 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. It is 7:35. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and he is the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast, also author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Hey, always great to join you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
All right. Everybody's talking about the Biden document situation. He says he has no regrets. He says there's no there there. But the White House press corps has not been pleased with the lack of response that they're getting from Corinne Jean-Pierre. And just so many question marks. Why did it take 60 days or more from when they first found documents for it to leak to the media? What happened during those 60 days? Why weren't they upfront about it? Even a week later, maybe after the election, they could have come up with it. But no, it's been almost 2 months. And then you have the whole mess with the DOJ and the documents and why they had lawyers handling the documents instead of DOJ or FBI. Just a lot of question marks. What do you sense from all of this? As you look at everything, you talk to people, you have your sources, there's so many news reports out there, there's speculation. What's going on, Tony, in your opinion? What's happening here?
So what's at the center of this are essentially presidential daily briefings. Apparently something on that order of magnitude was found, something at the top secret SCI level, something that indicates that the highest level of information at the White House was compromised. So that's what's at, kind of the nugget at the core of all this. The question then becomes, how did it leave the White House? Where did it go for the past 5 years, and who had access to it? And the answer to that, Rick, tells you everything you need to know. A guy named Hunter Biden was at least in one of the residents. Someone he recommended to his dad got hired to be the deputy who actually kind of helped move stuff around. That's a clue, the person that was actually involved in moving these things. And I don't believe for a minute, and most rational people do not believe for a minute, these documents just sat somewhere for the past 5 years. These things have been used. And I think that's why you saw, quote-unquote, lawyers, not the FBI, come in. Because the moment that FBI guys come in, Rick, this stuff all goes back to the ongoing investigations of Hunter Biden and what they're afraid of. Those investigations then link it directly to President Biden. That's what they're trying to avoid. That's why they instantly avoided a special prosecutor, not to get to the bottom of it, to insulate it, to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's why you didn't have any FBI agents go in like they did in Mar-a-Lago, where you saw they raided based on secured documents that they knew the Secret Service was overseeing and protecting. They didn't do that here because they know what they're going to find. They know they're going to find probably even more unsecured classified documents that were most likely used by members of the Biden family, his brother, Jim, and Hunter both, for purposes of use with foreign assets and entities to benefit the family. And I would argue that's what's at the heart of everything that's been happening with the Biden clan, is the fact that they have sold their services to those outside the country, which kicks this whole thing into a number of very onerous elements of Title 18 of what they should be prosecuted for. So that's why you've seen all of this stuff happen. It's all about isolating the Biden. It's not getting to the bottom of what's going on.
Well, it was interesting. There's a report that some of the documents were found in a folder marked personal in the residence.
Yes.
How an aide inadvertently placed those in a folder marked personal.
It wasn't inadvertent. Yeah, it wasn't inadvertent. No.
It's a bit of a
stretch. They knew exactly what they were doing. The reason this is being coming out now is that I think some elements of the Democrat Party have decided it's time for Joe to go. Otherwise, again, I do not believe for a minute these things just kind of sat out there for years. Nobody noticed them. This is being done, you know, Jim Jordan asked this question the other day, why now? Well, now is because I think official Washington, that which you call the permanent bureaucracy of the deep state, depending on one's definition, kind of recognizes that the Bidens are a liability, and I think they are now voting with this. And even Biden kind of alluded to this, that this was a D.C. insider thing. It is, kind of, in that they you know, they're being kind of thrown out to the wolves. But mark my words here. The Bidens and what the Bidens control, they will do everything they can to obfuscate and try to deny what they did with these documents. They walked them out of secure facilities. They used them for purposes that are illegal. And now it's time for them to be, you know, held accountable.
I want to turn to the latest developments this week in the Ukraine war. United
Sure.
States committing over $2 billion in arms, 500 vehicles, including MRAPs, 59 Bradleys, 90 Strykers, Humvees, 8 Avenger air defense systems. Mark Milley talking about Ukraine going on the offense. And there was one note, though, out of the meeting that they had in Europe this week, and that is that Germany had some reservations. And discuss a little bit about what's going on with Germany.
So the big issue right now is what do you actually give Ukraine that's going to be effective against the Russians? And Mark Milley said in this, in some of the articles I've read, did outline accurately that, you know, while the Ukrainians are working to arm up, there's been huge losses by the Russians. He said over 100,000. Lost in casualties. I don't doubt those numbers. What I found interesting is he didn't address the Ukrainian losses, which is the real issue. It's like, you know, what are we doing to replace and assist them? And I, again, I'm not taking sides because everybody thinks I'm taking sides when I say stuff that's negative against Ukraine. The Ukrainian challenge is how do you maintain the momentum of what they've done in places like Kherson? Mark Milley says they've had a great victory there. It's like, yeah, then what? Because right now the Russians have called up over 300 million men. I would argue it's closer to actually 300,000 men. They're looking to go toward a million. I think they've got closer to a million. And the Russians are actually making great progress in Bakhmut. And they may be even taking control of that city soon. So the question becomes, what can the West give the Ukrainians to be effective in pushing back? And what the Ukrainians think they want is armor. They want tanks. And I can tell you right now, based on everything I've heard from very credible guys, Ukraine ain't the place for heavy armor. The conditions there are just not like the central European battlefield that they were designed to fight on as part of the airland battle back in the 80s and 90s. It's just not in the cards. So they want the British to provide them Challenger tanks, which the Challenger 2s, the British have coughed up or think they're going to cough up 14. They had wanted Leopard tanks from the Germans, and they wanted Abrams from us, and they wanted the Leclerc from the French. And I'm just saying, anybody who listens to me say this who knows what I'm talking about is like they're rolling their eyes, because you don't want multiple types of tanks on the battlefield. You want one type to be able to logistically sustain it. So my point is there's any number of things wrong with what the Ukrainians are asking, and NATO is not going to be able to give them everything because of, just think of that. You need to have a separate logistics chain for each one of those types of armor. And those things, Rick, they are highly intense on fuel and maintenance. So these things aren't going to be the answer to help them win the war. As a matter of fact, it may be a liability. I think that's what's really the debate here is like, we can't really give them this. It's not going to really give them any help. So that's why they're going for Strykers. The French are going for AMX lighter vehicles, which may be more effective on the battlefield. It's a transitional time in the battle, and I'm not confident that the Ukrainians are going to get what they need to actually stop the upcoming Russian offensive that's going to probably start in a few weeks.
And there were reports, and John Kirby was talking about this yesterday in a White House briefing, North Korea providing weapons to Russia. Anything that we can do about that?
Well, of course, as long as we touch it. I mean, we've been masters in messing with things behind the scenes. And we could do a lot to interdict or prevent or mess with the transaction itself. But the question is political will. One of the things I've noticed from dealing with people who are involved in these transactions inside the administration is the administration has a very low threshold of any risk. And anything that even if it makes sense that they're asked to do, they just don't want to do. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, we could. But the question becomes, is there a political will to do it? So I guess we'll see.
And there was some talk of going to the United Nations on it, and we know where that's going to lead. Nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, the part of the reason we're here, Rick, is the Biden administration is process rich and progress empty. They will make a big show of things, but they lack the internal knowledge and wisdom to get things done, and they don't have the political instincts and willingness to actually take on risk to go out and do something that may backfire. Obviously, they've learned some very bad lessons from places like Afghanistan. And that's another reason. We could talk about Afghanistan at some point. But no, they are very timid, and even the things that you might think they want to do, they really don't do. So.
And one more I want to get to you on.
Sure.
And that is the president was speaking at the National Action Network Martin Luther King Jr. Day breakfast. And the reason you say, oh, boy, is because you know what he said.
Yeah.
He said
yeah.
at the breakfast, we have to retrain cops. Why should you always shoot with deadly force? The fact is, if you need to use your weapon, you don't have to do that. Instead of anybody coming at you and the first thing you do is shoot to kill, you shoot him in the leg. That's President Biden. Now, I know you do a lot of consulting with law enforcement. What has he got wrong there?
It's completely wrong. So, you know, as the audience knows, I advise Sheriff Dave Decatur down in Stafford County. David has actually had members of the media down on what he called, what's called the Virtua 2000 virtual range. It's like a big stage that you go up and do virtual shooting. And I can tell you from the people who've used that, the people who've been in practical circumstance, when you're faced with someone with a knife or a deadly weapon, you have fractions of a second to pull out your weapon and shoot them. And the last thing you're going to do is try to do a circus shot into the knee or your ankle. You're basically full of adrenaline, and all you're trying to do is defend your life or defend the life of others, and you're going to shoot center mass. Rick, that's what you do. I've shot since my teens, and that's what I've been taught to do. So no one purposely goes to kill someone. You shoot, you use, quote-unquote, deadly force for purposes of stopping whatever the target is. So what Biden is saying is not only insane, it is beyond insane. This is something that no rational person who understands how things happen in the real world would ever support. And again, it just reminds everybody of how detached Biden really is from the reality we're living in right now.
That's pretty amazing. I mean,
yep.
if you go to the point where you say, well, you can just wing them, aren't there going to be a lot more bullets flying with his strategy? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You're only supposed to use your weapon when your life or someone else's life is threatened. It's deadly force because you've got deadly force coming at you. So it would just, it
sounds
like.
And you have no time to make it. Yeah, you can't aim except for center mass. That's all you've got time to do. So it's insane.
Let me see if I can hit the gun without hitting his hand.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to talk to him.
This is dangerously stupid, literally dangerously stupid by Biden. So.
All right, what you got on the Thought to Action podcast this weekend?
So we've got Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi goes through and we talk about the green energy fraud. We go through and talk about the World Economic Forum and how much we all look forward to eating bugs and owning nothing and being happy. So everybody will like it a lot. We've got a lot of good feedback from it. And Dr. Corsi is a great kind of scholar looking at everything in context. So I think people will enjoy it a lot.
You will find it at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks, Rick.
7:48, Saturday morning update. We've got KT McFarland up next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the GW Parkway northbound between the Sparrow Parkway and the Beltway, there is long-term construction, but one lane is getting through. In Kensington, a portion of Beach Drive is closed for weekend recreation between Connecticut Avenue and Knowles Avenue, and the Sligo Creek Parkway also closed for recreational activities this weekend between Old Carroll Avenue and Piney Branch Road and between Forest Glen Road and University Boulevard. In Virginia, there is a work zone on eastbound 66 between Nutley Street and the Beltway in the right lane that is not causing delays at this time. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures this morning, not freezing, but chilly in the 30s and 40s. We'll climb up to around 45 this afternoon, and northwest winds still about 15 miles per hour. A few passing clouds tonight. Temperatures down to near freezing, around 34 to 35 for the D.C. metro area. Clouds to start and rain for your Sunday afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
35 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:50 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by K.T. McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and she has authored the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., honored to have you with us as always.
Honor and a pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you. We were just talking to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about some of the battlefield conditions in the Ukraine war and the sort of the technical aspects of some of the new aid that we're going to send. Wanted to talk to you more about the kind of the big picture. You've got the Ukraine war. You've got us providing weaponry to Ukraine. But what is it, you know, the impact on us militarily and budgetarily?
You know, I just keep thinking back to the first couple of days in the Trump administration. We're sitting in the Oval Office, and President Trump's talking to the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. And the first thing out of her mouth is, what are you going to do about Ukraine? And his response, without missing a beat, was, well, what are you going to do about Ukraine? It's in your neighborhood. And, you know, long pause. And that's sort of where we are now, I think, and that's where we've been all along. It's now gotten to, like, World War One trench warfare. It's back and forth. They take a little, they lose a little, you know, the kind of things that Tony Schaefer is just so good at discussing. But I think we need to take a step back. We've got some serious thinking to do. We've already supplied Ukraine with twice as much military equipment as all of Europe combined. We've just doubled that amount to the point we're now going to give them $100 billion by the end of this year. All in. And Europe is at the same time pulling back their support for various economic reasons, political reasons of their own. So I'm not saying we shouldn't give Ukraine this aid, but we need to say that it comes at a price to us. It's costing our own armed forces. Ukraine is expanding weapons faster than the United States can build them and replace them in our own forces. So if we want to continue supporting Ukraine, and maybe we do, maybe we don't, that's a separate debate. We should be realistic about the cost to our own national security. We need to seriously ramp up defense spending, not just spending for Ukraine, but our own military spending to replace this stuff if we want to pay for this Ukraine war. And Biden, at the meantime, he's cutting defense spending, increasing the aid to Ukraine, ramping up the American involvement in Ukraine with no particular end in sight. And so I think it's something that Congress needs to address and hopefully conservative analysts. You know, I think that the whole if you really were serious about winning the Ukraine war, and I'm not sure these guys are, but if they were really serious, end the war on American fossil fuels, let the American energy industry replace the Middle East, replace Russia as the energy source for the world, especially to Europe, especially for natural gas. It'll drive the price of oil and natural gas down really low. It'll bankrupt Russia. Russia can't afford to pay for this war. You know, people in the government often don't think that there's a cost, a financial cost at this stuff, where you just keep printing money, just keep passing legislation. But if Russia can't afford to go to war because it doesn't have the money it needs to feed its own people and pay for a war because oil prices are so low, then the war is over pretty quickly. The other thing is that right now the debate we're seeing on Capitol Hill, right, it's sort of three tiers of it. One, should we just extend the debt ceiling and keep spending willy-nilly and probably to get the votes to extend it, to raise the debt ceiling? There'll be even more pork barrel projects added to get votes. That's one option. That's a sort of Biden-Schumer option. And then there's a second option, which is to say, well, we'll kind of cut spending a little bit here, a little bit there. But we're not going to really take a serious address at the deficit, which is now it's a structural deficit. Every year we're spending 20 or 30% more than we take in. And maybe that's called the McConnell option. And then there's the people who say, well, we've got to cut everything, including defense, Social Security, Medicaid. And I'm not sure whose option that is, but President Trump has come out and said, you're crazy if you cut Medicare and Social Security and punish our senior citizens and their savings and their way of life because you can't get your budget in order. I think this is decision time for McCarthy, and I would say go back and read the thing I wrote a couple weeks ago about the crazy boss strategy. He should just go to Schumer. He should go to the people right railed against him, Biden, Schumer, McConnell, and just say we're not raising the debt ceiling unless there's serious cuts. And serious cuts doesn't mean Medicare. It doesn't mean Social Security. But it could mean a lot of the junk that we're spending, especially the Green New Deal program. And if we were really serious about it, we'd start cutting the bureaucrats out of Washington. I mean, for example, one policy that's been raised is maybe we go to a flat tax, get rid of all the deductions, all that. Just a flat tax. Everybody knows how much they owe. If you don't want to spend the money, well, that's an interesting concept because a flat tax means who needs all these IRS agents to go around and adjudicate whether you've done the right thing or not. It's pretty simple if it's a flat tax. Anyway, I just think that that the Republicans, if Republicans bend again, just go along to get along with a higher, raise the debt ceiling, continue to spend money. I mean, we're just heading towards the cliff of collapse.
I cannot understand how we can be $31 trillion in debt, then you layer in another $5.2 trillion from the Biden administration for the Inflation Reduction Act and other things. I don't know how that's sustainable. Do you think McCarthy has that avenue with the Freedom Caucus? Is there a chance he could succeed there, or is he just going to hit a brick wall with the, as you mentioned, Biden, Schumer, McConnell team when Biden says absolutely not negotiating on this?
Wait, but think of it this way. I mean, remember those 1960s car movies where there would be teenagers and they would be in their convertibles and they would be drag racing towards the end of a cliff, and whoever jumped out of the car first or diverted the car from the cliff, that guy was the chicken, and mm-hmm. So the guy who got closer to the cliff. So that's so it's like chicken playing chicken. They're going to play chicken. Who's going to be the first to bail out? But, the problem is if you wait too long in the car, you actually go off the cliff. So that's mm-hmm. where we are now. The Schumer, McConnell, they're playing chicken. They say, look, the chicken is, you've got to do this or else. And McCarthy, if he can get the Freedom Caucus behind him, and they are already behind him to hang tough, he's just got to get those recalcitrant big spender Republicans and just to say, no, we're staying in this car. We're playing chicken. If you're going to be the first guy to jump out, not us. Because I think those Republicans in the Freedom Caucus have shown it's the crazy boss theory. They're going to get rid of him if he doesn't, if he goes along to get along like every other Republican has for the last 20 years.
Well, I can see the media panic if the game of chicken goes too far. They will just completely freak out. K.T. McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor and the author of the bestseller Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And I would recommend you go back and check out her Crazy Boss Strategy opinion piece. That's at foxnews.com. K.T., thank you so much as always.
Thanks. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you very much for being with us. Should quickly acknowledge the passing of David Crosby, of course, of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, major player in the rock movement from Woodstock, even recording albums solo and touring solo for decades, and a big loss in the world of rock. David Crosby dead at 81.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.